I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today, the Arakwal people of the Bundjalung Nation, and pay my respects to the elders past, present, and emerging. Are you ready to win at the game of life? Well, throw out that rule book and get down to the business of being the best and most authentic version of you. Welcome to the Human Design Podcast. We're changing the rules around success, abundance, purpose, love, and life, where we're creating a planet where everyone can thrive in a world that loves and supports each other. I'm your host, Emma Dunwoody, a qualified master coach, human design expert, podcaster, and entrepreneur that is living the life of my dreams, breaking all the rules while doing it, making a huge impact, and living my design and manifesting miracles on the daily. Join me as I break down and simplify everything you need to live in alignment with your human design, teach you how to recondition your unconscious mind for greatness, and to take back your power so you can manifest your heaven on earth and serve the rest of the planet at the same time. It's time to give up the fear and step into your highest potential, to reach for the stars, to know and live your greatness. It's what you deserve, and it's what the planet really needs from you. So buckle up and enjoy the ride. Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. Well, today I have an epic guest for you, someone who I have been following, I feel like, since the beginning of your journey, which is kind of weird. It occurred to me recently that I've been meditating for 20 years. I'm like, where did those 20 years go? But anywho, so Dave Asprey, Australian accent here, welcome to the podcast.
It's my pleasure.
It's epic to talk to you. I have really enjoyed your journey over the years. I remember once having a conversation with Alison Charles, who is now married to Luke Story, and going, oh my God, I remember when I heard Luke interview you. And I'm like, I just knew it.
I used to be a coach for Luke before he started his podcast. Yeah.
Wow. I'm actually going to be on his podcast in June, which is super exciting. But I feel so grateful to speak to these people that I feel like you've been a part of my world without obviously knowing at all for such a long time. So thanks for being here. So for my listeners at home, of course, you want to know, Dave is a 2-4 sacral generator. I'm fascinated by this whole biohacking thing. And I believe you're actually called these days the father of biohacking. Is that right?
Well, I did coin the term. I did create the first and longest running conference on the biohacking business. And my name is in the dictionary when they added it as a new word. So I think that qualifies.
Yeah. We'll give you that one. And I think the thing that I'd love to start really briefly, because I do have a bunch of, I want to talk about your human design, but I also have a bunch of biohacking questions. But I always love to start with the journey, you know, like the short version of, you know, that moment that for you, it was that health and wellness moment where you're kind of like, holy crap, like I've been given all this information, my life's not where it's meant to be, this isn't working. And then you find this courage almost to go, yeah, I'm going to break the rules, I'm going to do something different. So can you tell us a little bit about that moment and the short version of this journey to become where you are, who you are today?
I used to weigh 300 pounds, which is 50% more than I am now. I grew up at arthritis when I was 14. I lived in a basement with toxic mold, but we didn't know it. So I had nosebleeds every day, strep throat. So I took antibiotics every month for about 15 years and 3 knee surgeries before I was 23, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, high risk of stroke and heart attack, pre-diabetes, all before I was 30. I also had a really substantial career in Silicon Valley, despite all of that, sometimes feeling like I was barely making it. But I was a computer hacker. And I just finally said, I've worked out 90 minutes a day, 6 days a week, consistently for 18 months. And I still weigh 300 pounds. I still have the same pants that are 50% larger than my pant size today. And I just said, maybe I need to try harder. And then I was like, wait a minute. I try harder than everyone I know. It's not me. I have bad advice. So I decided I would take my computer hacking skills and turn them around on myself. I started hanging out with people in the longevity industry before it was considered possible. And I learned what's now biohacking from my elders, people 3 times my age in a nonprofit where I became president and chairman in Palo Alto, California. And every month I would interview a leader in the field of longevity or cognitive function or something like that. And these people taught me how to fix myself and then eventually how to help other people.
I just love it. Like, it, one of the big things that I talk about a lot here is breaking the rules. You know, a lot of what, from my perspective, my background is, I mean, I was in advertising for 15 years and then I retrained as a master coach. So I'm a behavioral coach. And human design, I kind of really rejected and resisted for a long time. So it was a bit too woo, you know, a bit too out there. But I'm very results driven and I got the results. My clients got the results and here I am. And one of the big things for me is I think it gives us the permission to break the rules, to actually go, hang on a second, I'm giving my power away to something external of me and the authority lives within me. So that's why I love human design, because it gives us the power to do, you know, what you've done. One of the things I'm fascinated about in all this time, obviously with biohacking and you being like kind of right out the front, what have you seen? What are the particular things that have stuck that still to this day you're like, this is the thing, like stick with it? And what are the things that at first you thought, oh, this was going to be great, but actually it kind of fell away?
You know, avoiding canola oil and seed oils, soybean, corn, stuff like that. That's actually how the body works. Obesity went up when we added those things in. Diabetes and cancer, everything gets bad when people eat much of that stuff. So avoiding that is something you're going to do for the rest of your life. And also limiting the amount of sugar that you eat, which makes you old and causes all sorts of problems. Those are both cool. But avoiding human-made and natural toxins is the most important thing you can do if you want to live a long time. My goal, I'm going to live to at least 180. I've spent $2 million. I age at 72% the rate of normal. And so given all that and just the incredible amounts of lab data and I even run a longevity company now. Yeah. And I'll just tell you, if you're not getting enough animal protein, you're not going to live a long time and you're not going to feel really good. And if you're an executive, cognitive function and stable energy is the most important thing you can have. And now I'm going to probably make you mad a little bit. I don't care what your human design is. If your mitochondria aren't working right, you won't function as well.
Yeah.
It's a true statement. And just about the human design in general, I'm a rational computer science Silicon Valley guy by background. I tried all the stuff that's supposed to work and it didn't work. So as a rational human being, I'm like, well, let's try the stuff that I don't think is going to work because I might be wrong. So I find myself in Tibet on the side of Mount Kailash having yak butter tea and noticing that it works. And that led me to create a, you know, $140 million a year company called Bulletproof, which I'm unrelated to anymore. My new coffee company is called Danger Coffee because who knows what you might do. And I love that. It's one of those things where if I had stuck to my belief systems instead of just saying, I'm going to see what works. And if it doesn't work, I'll just get the data. I would probably have MS or be dead and have just a terrible life of chronic fatigue and brain fog and just emotional stuff. By deciding that I was going to do whatever it took and I was only going to do things that I could prove worked after I did them. Not, you can't prove something works before you do it. You just say, I think it's going to work. That led me to learn meditation from the masters on multiple continents. And I've worked with some top gurus and I've explored Enneagram. I'm not an expert in human design. My girlfriend is quite knowledgeable on it and uses it with clients. She's a dating coach. And so I've talked about it a lot, but all of these frameworks, I don't take any of them with, as like, this is the gospel, but are they really useful for self understanding and self reflection and seeing patterns? They are, right? And so I'm a fan of human design. I think it's got a lot in it, and it's tied to a very honorable lineage as well, just coming out of really ancient Chinese astrology. So cool stuff.
Yeah, well, thanks. I appreciate it. And I totally agree. It's really interesting. I ran a class yesterday, a business class, and I'm like, look, my ultimate goal is that you're going to let go of your human design because, it's a treasure map, sure, but you're the treasure. You're the one that brings it to life. And I think that's the thing, right? Ultimately, you know, I've had a great deal of success in many areas of my life because I've learned to trust myself. You know, similarly, I was diagnosed with depression and panic disorder, told I was never going to heal it, but I'd learned to live with it. And given that I
you know, considered taking my life every day for 7 years, I was like, well, that's not an option. So I basically healed myself doing, you know, similar experiments to you. What worked, I did more of. What didn't, I did stop doing. So I really love that. And just a quick moment to geek out on your human design. Your personality, sun and earth, these are two of the biggest energies that sit within you. You actually have this, it's a channel, and it's called Genius to Freak. And what
Genius to Freak?
What? Genius to Freak. Yep, that's what it's like, that's what its nickname is.
Sounds accurate.
Because right, it's this energy of being able to take super complex information and simplify it. And if you like, if you put pressure on yourself to you know, make this stuff simple right now, on demand kind of thing, it's like it comes out like you're a freak. Like, it makes sense in here, but it doesn't make sense when it comes out. But the moment that you, and I think it's a lot of what you've been doing in your life, the moment that you run the experiment and then iterate and then, you know, keep going and you just share those results, all of a sudden you're this genius. You're like, wow, because you know, it's that whole thing that, you know, people who are really good at what they do simplify everything because they know what isn't needed. But they know what is needed. So this is a really big part of your primary energy. Does that feel like it resonates at all?
It resonates to a certain extent. The thing there, sometimes even if I haven't done the experiment, there's an inner knowingness that you learn to tap into. It comes with mastery and it comes with wisdom. And there's times I just know the answer. And yep. A lot of doctors who practice for 30 years, they know what's wrong. And then they'll run some labs, but they already know. So you could say, well, that's arrogance. I just think it's wisdom. And wisdom is actually measurable. You can look at how insulated the nerve pathways in your brain are, because when they're insulated, they run electricity something like 300 times faster than uninsulated or unmyelinated nerves. So this is the 10,000 hour practice rule. It's just with electricity and biohacking, you don't need 10,000 hours to myelinate a nerve. It's trivial. So Have I spent 6 months of my life with computers hooked up to my head, teaching certain pathways in my brain to do things? I have. And I've done shamanic training and a bunch of other stuff. So when I wrote my first big nutrition book, The Bulletproof Diet, guys, the specific form of MCT oil is the one that works. Why? Because I know it. Right. Yeah. And then 5 years later, research comes out from UC San Diego saying, oh, yeah, that one form, that's the one that has the biggest effect on Alzheimer's and ketosis. Like, well, see, told you. Right. And how do I know? Because I could feel that it works. Right. So It's the ability to translate a felt sense or even just to think about it and to sort of tap into something. And as a hardcore rationalist, you could say, well, you have to do a spreadsheet to know anything. Right. And it's a belief system. And what I've learned is that there's a little tiny window of perception where you kind of just know stuff. And then there's an emotional response. And then there's a thinking response. And if you know how to listen to that first one, quite often the answer is just apparent. And then you can skip a lot of steps and then, or you can use the steps to verify the answer instead of disbelieve it. So that's been a big part of how I learned, but it's not how I used to make things happen. It's how I do things now.
Yeah. You know what? A part of me wants to challenge that. And this is what I want to challenge, because you're 43, which is in your personality sun. The gift of this is insight, and I actually have it as my core talent. And what that means, and I can remember being a tiny kid and having exactly what you've just explained. Like, I just freaking know it. I don't know how I know it. I just know it. But the thing is, I didn't trust it. Like, I trusted it when I was little. I didn't trust it when I was growing up. So it's like, over the years, you've built the muscle. So like the logical brain goes, see, it gets better and better because I've done the thing. But really, is it just, has it got better or have you just trusted it more?
All humans have that inner knowing knowledge. And yes, kids are better at it. But all humans through the course of growing up develop very rapid automated ways of canceling it out.
Yeah.
So the process of wisdom is learning how to turn off the automatic cancellation of that. Which is at two layers. There's emotional, like traumatic response, and then there's cognitive. And some people could say that's trusting yourself, but trust is an emotion, and emotions happen faster than thoughts. So it comes down to reprogram the nervous system response. But even after that, someone with wisdom has myelinated nerves and knows how to connect better to that information than someone who's brand new. So there's something that happens with practice.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I go between like the mystery school side of reality, which I do with computers at 40 years of Zen, it's a 5-day intensive brain program. And people say it's like the best plant medicine ceremony ever, but there's no plants. I'm like, well, you know, you can trip on your own brainwaves. I can go from there to, you know, let's go to the boardroom. And they're both simultaneously always happening all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just a question of how rapidly and cleanly can you switch between the two? And does it freak you out that they both are real and they conflict?
Mm. Well,
does that make any sense?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I love it. And I think that that's, you know, if we just expand that out a little bit, that's actually where planet Earth is right now. Because what you're talking about is creating this balance between the masculine and the feminine. You're talking about being able to use, you know, more of our human potential, because we've been using almost like one side of our human potential and we're now learning to use the other side. And I think one of the biggest challenges that we see more in the the mass community is, you know, like, well, we all need to rise the feminine, but it's like, no, we need to balance the masculine and feminine. So I feel like that's really what you're talking about. It's like head and heart.
Come on, Emma. We need to suppress men so that women can thrive. Come on. You didn't know that?
Yeah, I did hear that a while back, but I chose not to subscribe. So
I'm not a fan of suppressing anyone. It doesn't work very well because they tend to get mad and fight back. And so men shouldn't suppress women. Women shouldn't suppress men because it never ends well. So no. Weird how that works, right?
I know, funny about that. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're all human. I was listening to what is it? I can't remember his surname. Is it Haramain? You know, the quantum physicist.
Oh, he's on my show. He's great. The ski instructor who can do better than CERN at predicting physics. Yeah.
Oh, I know, right? Like, fascinating. And anyway, like, he just used this really simple metaphor of, you know, like the whole theory of that we are one. And he used it by talking about a Persian rug. Imagine you have your face in the Persian rug, and that's what most humans do. They've got their face in the Persian rug, and they can see that all these weird colors, and maybe they can see some, you know, gross little bugs or whatever. And they're like, this is chaos. It doesn't make sense. But the moment you step back, you're like, wow, there's all the patterns. And then he just said, like, imagine that's planet Earth. You know, planet Earth is all of us with our face. If we step back, we're all just one. We're all just part of this one big thing. And I'm like, oh, boom, that's it. Like,
right.
it was so powerful. Anyway, I'm super curious about a few things. Honestly, a few of these things are pretty selfish because they're things that I'm pretty interested in myself. So I'm curious to get your ideas on it. Number one, collagen. I mean, I'm about to turn 50 next year. Mm-hmm. Collagen is obviously something that I'm like, you know, I have taken it in a couple of different forms and I want to talk to you about that. I've kind of learned that you need to take it with vitamin C, otherwise it's pointless. The uptake's not there. But there's part of me that... But
that's nonsense. Whoever told me that was just wrong.
Go.
Yeah.
Go. Like collagen. Do I need it? Like if I take it in that, if I'm ingesting it, is it working? Is there any point in me taking it? Great.
So I made collagen a $1 billion supplement. I was the first guy to sell collagen for this and just have spent thousands of hours on research and just on communicating about collagen and built what was once the largest collagen brand back when I was involved with Bulletproof. So I was on the Dr. Oz show. I don't know if he's big over there, but been on several times. And the first time I went on, it was about collagen. And he has a whole board of doctors backstage before you ever get a chance to be invited on the show where they just grill you through the deepest stuff to make sure you're not making up stuff. And I passed that and I've written books about it. So your body loses collagen over time. This is my big book on longevity. That actually happens. And collagen is made up of a little bit of vitamin C, trace amounts, like less than 250 milligrams per day type of amounts, plus some amino acids like glycine and a little bit of serine. And some minerals, but not a lot of minerals. So that's what collagen is. So people say, well, you don't need to eat collagen because you could make collagen. Well, the real way to think about longevity is how expensive is it to make something and what else could you make with the same resources, right? And you get these mentally, some mentally malnourished, and I don't mean this as an insult. I mean as like a physiological thing. Vegans. I was a raw vegan for a long time, and I had the same mental malnourishment. It comes from mineral depletion and vitamin depletion and fat depletion. But the belief is there, well, my body can make all the protein I need, therefore I don't need to eat protein. But it's nonsense, right? So the question is, how do I eat the right stuff so that my body can most easily make all the stuff it needs to make and have energy left over for me to think and grow and take care of my kids and evolve and stuff like that? So should you eat collagen? Yes, there are studies that show that collagen directly enters the body in the form of di- and tripeptides. These are 2 and 3 amino acid sequences that are passed through digestion, and that collagen can signal your body to grow. It's a signal, not just an ingredient, to grow more bone, to grow more connective tissue, and to grow more skin. They're different kinds of collagen. So there's pretty good evidence that eating collagen works. And since collagen already contains vitamin C as an ingredient in it, why do you need to take more vitamin C with it? Because some hack out there writing a blog post, probably selling vitamin C, told you so. No, you don't need to do that. In fact, we believe that collagen probably helps prevent scurvy if people eat enough of it. I wouldn't rely on it, but so like of all the parts you're going to get from an animal that would have vitamin C, it would be the connective tissue, which is collagen. So
I love it.
Should you eat it? Well, you need the raw ingredients in it more than anything else because your body has more fascia than other kinds of tissue. It's really important. It's all this connective tissue. So there's good evidence that says you should eat it. There's also evidence that says you might want to top out at about 20 grams a day, maybe 40. And the reason for that is excessive collagen, especially without other proteins, can lead to the formation of something called oxalate, which comes usually from eating things like kale and spinach and raspberry and beets and other stuff in excess. In fact, it's a major problem. Now people are getting 70% of kidney stones from oxalates, not because of collagen. They're getting it because they're eating too many plants or the wrong kind of plants. Yeah. But you can overdose on collagen, but do two scoops, one scoop, two scoops, maybe three, depending on the brand. And you will be better off as long as it's grass fed and it's not the industrial collagen that's always like, if it's from industrial chickens and stuff, you're going to get a lot of glyphosate and bad stuff. You don't want to eat that.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. I love it. Back on the list. We have a great local brand that is really cool.
Perfect. There's tons of local brands now. I like to think I inspired a lot of them. They all come from 3 big suppliers. They're all the same.
Right.
Hello, Jalita. Nice to see you guys.
I love it. I feel like, have you ever been to Australia? You've been to Australia.
Yeah, a couple times. Yeah. In fact, Bulletproof was really big. Biohacking's still big over there. I don't think Bulletproof is much of a presence there anymore.
Yeah. Well, the where I get my my supplements from, they stop all the Bulletproof
stuff. They still do?
They do, but they're really, cool. Really good. And I live in Byron Bay, so I don't know if you've ever been to Byron Bay, but it's like all the biohackers live here. It's all about health.
Oh, Byron Bay. I know a bunch of people from there. I haven't been yet, but that's the place. So I'll have to get some danger coffee out there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, next question I want to ask you about is microdosing. What's your opinion? What do you think it's valuable? Mm. I've tried it. I've definitely felt improvement from it, but I'd really love your opinion on microdosing.
So microdosing is the idea that if you take about 5% of the psychedelic amount of certain drugs, that it'll have benefits different than psychedelic. And there's really good evidence to support that. And the drugs you could microdose include things like ketamine, LSD, and mushrooms are probably the most common ones. And I've microdosed all the above. Yep. And if you feel it, you're not microdosing. Okay, this is really important. A lot of endurance, like ultra endurance athletes, 100-mile run kind of things, a lot of them are microdosing LSD because it works for that. So why would you do this? It turns out the reasons you do this are the same reasons that at my neuroscience program in Seattle, 40 years of Zen, we're about to start including ketamine in the program. People can sign up for that now. And ketamine is a legal psychedelic, and like the other ones, I'm actually writing a book on this right now, so I'm up on the research.
Love it.
Almost all of the psychedelics, in fact, all the ones I just mentioned, all of them, they raise a compound called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. What that means is they make your brain more neuroplastic like a young person so you can learn. They also turn off default mode network and you have journeys and whatever, but you don't have journeys at low doses, but you still get the neuroplasticity. So that would be the argument for doing it. Now, you could do intermittent fasting. You could do exercise to get better sleep. There's other ways to raise neuroplasticity, but there isn't something as strong as those. So yes, there's a good argument for it.
I'm curious because the thing for me, and I don't know, like, again, because my background is behavioral. So I really do believe that if, you know, we believe something enough, we can create just about anything. So for me, I feel like it really had a positive impact on memory.
Interesting. On memory. Yeah. So that's a neuroplasticity thing.
And especially memory recall. Like I was like.
Long-term or short-term?
Both. So it was definitely something that I noticed straight away. It was like I had greater availability to, you know, recall information, whether it was information that I learned 10 years ago or a conversation I had the yesterday kind of thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's
I'm not sure whether I talked myself into it or not.
There are studies showing that it does improve connectivity across the brain. I use a compound called aniracetam, which is hard to get in Australia because the Australian government seems to be opposed to your right to take supplements of your choice for whatever reason. I'm not sure who gave them the right to say that because that's not a right they have, but that's your problem in Australia. You guys are a bunch of old convicts escaped.
We refer to our government and we call ourselves the nanny state.
Wow.
The nanny state. So where I live in Byron is kind of like Austin, Texas over there.
I love it. Like,
there are no rules. We do what we want to do. Like everybody walks to their own beat. Like there's every crazy human being you're ever going to meet in Byron. It's just epic. I love it.
I've got to come visit I'm happy to, like, if I hire a nanny, I'm happy to have one, but you don't get to be my nanny unless I hire you.
Exactly. Correct.
And so I have a hard time with that, but I will say if you can get aniracetam, which has been a pharmaceutical drug for more than 50 years over there, that improves working memory more than any other substance that I'm aware of in research. And it's something I've used consistently for 25 years now. And people are like, how do you know all this stuff? You know, like I didn't prepare for this. I know you're going to ask me about what collagen is made out of. I just know that stuff because it's right there because I might've enhanced my ability to learn for 25 years. And I've also realigned all the networks in my brain and all that. So anyone can do this. It just takes work and time and knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Next. I'm so super conscious of time and I want to ask you, about peptides. So peptides are something that I experimented with this year and I just loved it. Now you're going to ask me, which ones did you take? I can't actually remember. I fully appreciate that's not great, but I know that collagen was in there. They were very much about, muscle growth, I say anti-aging, but I don't love that term. Longevity is a better term. But what's your opinion on peptides?
In my longevity book called Superhuman, I wrote a couple chapters on peptides and longevity. And I've tried the vast majority of them, and I kind of go in and out when I use them or not. The one that would be most relevant for people in Australia would be something called Melanotan 2. And melanotan is spelled like melanin, M-E-L-A-N-O-tan. You inject it and you go into the sun for 20 minutes and it gives you a tan. A real tan.
Really? Now, is it good for me? Because if it's good for me,
yes,
I'll give it a crack.
You have it in your brain as well. If you have melanin in your brain, you have melanin in your eyes. It's actually really important for your mitochondria. So having a healthy tan is healthy, but there is a lot of sun in Australia. So maybe it makes sense to inject that stuff. By the way, it makes your brain feel really happy and it makes you really horny too. It's
winning libido.
Exactly. Like winning on every front. Too much, you might get nauseous. So don't overdo it.
Okay.
But you do this for 2 or 3 days and you have a nice tan. Now you're less likely to get skin cancer because you have built-in protection. Then take some antioxidants. And then you're going to age less and you'll be much happier. A tan really affects dopamine levels in the body as well. Yeah. So this is just a completely obvious one. Another one called BPC-157 that the US FDA is trying to ban. Speeds healing dramatically. And you can see why the Food and Drug Sales Association would be opposed to things that make people feel or to make people heal quickly for, you know, $30
because we can't have that. We're not allowed 5-HTP here for this. Yeah.
I'm so confused. I'm like, why do people allow their governments if the governments don't allow the things people want? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
But I know, right?
Yeah, it's so weird. Maybe Byron Bay and Texas could like join up and we could become like a separate country.
Exactly. Let's just go our own way. You know, I was just in Samoa and I was having this conversation with this guy who was driving my taxi and I'm talking about quantum physics and he's like, yeah, I kind of get what you're talking about. Like he's kind of heard about it. And then I ask him about mental health in Samoa and he's like, what now? I'm like, depression, anxiety. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, and he's like, what do you mean? We're free and happy. Like that. And I'm like, wow, this stuff blows my mind. Like the worlds that we live in, how we think we are so free. We're just not. But anyway.
That's probably a human design thing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, question for you. Next question. I know you talk a lot about vegetables, good vegetables, bad vegetables, raw, cooked, all that sort of stuff. I'd love to have that conversation. But really quickly, I take a greens powder, right? And I know there was one greens powder that I was taking and then I discovered that it actually used the wrong B, was it B12? And so I was like, what? Like, anyway, so I would really love, and the brand that I've gone back to is the one that I've always used. What is your opinion on drinking a greens every day? And if it's a good thing, is there particular brands that you recommend?
You're going to make a lot of people mad with my answer.
I don't care. Go for it.
No, drinking greens powder every day is not a good idea. If you want to do something like that every day, chlorella, there's some pretty good evidence for it. And maybe spirulina, but not always. But chlorella, generally a good idea. And the rest of it, look, nowhere in recorded history did every day of the year we have access to pounds of fresh, allegedly fresh, green vegetables, all 50 of them that are in the average powder. We're talking to make that little bit of powder you take, we're talking about the amount you would gather in a whole afternoon. So is it possible to overdose on plants that contain well-documented plant toxins that cause 70% of kidney stones and calcification of all of your tissues? Yes. Is it possible you're allergic to two of the 40 or 50 plants in your green powder? Yes. Who told you vegetables were good for you anyway? And did they know what they were talking about? Because if you ask your grandparents, I'm pretty sure they were eating steak whenever they could. They were not throwing out the steak to eat broccoli. In fact, if you told them to do it, they probably would stab you with their fork because they knew what they were doing. So, sorry, guys.
Your son loves you so much right now.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. Plant green powder, raw powder, it's full of oxalate. It's full of phytic acid. It's not full of bioavailable minerals. Because your body needs minerals in a form it can absorb, and all plants protect themselves by stealing minerals from animals so animals don't overeat the plants. So when some vegan comes by and, you know, kind of uses that screechy voice and says, there's minerals in plants, you say, it doesn't matter if there's minerals in plants, can your body absorb them? And before they can answer, they usually just break a bone because their bone density is so low just from standing there, and then they can't finish the conversation. I know, I was a raw vegan. This kind of stuff was happening to me all the time. It was terrible.
Yeah. So what vegetables should we eat? Like, tell me the balance. Like, we've actually had a thing with my family recently. We didn't eat a lot of red meat for whatever reason, and something significant shifted. So all of a sudden we're eating a lot more red meat. And my 16-year-old son, who is like a lot taller, bigger than me, he's like, Mom, I'm a different human. Yeah. You know, eating all this red meat, like, I'm just loving it. So let's talk about red meat, vegetables. Go for it.
It's so important. My son's 16, or my son's 14. My daughter's just turning 17. And they both, when they started at their current school, like, there's chicken all the time. So fortunately they live at home, and even though it's a boarding school, so they get to eat at home. So we give them steak in the morning so they get enough red meat, because like, we don't feel as good if we just eat chicken. Yeah. And you get a lot more minerals from steak. Chicken has a lot of glyphosate and very low mineral and not very good fat in it. So if you want to get lean and live a long time, there's an argument for 1 gram of animal protein per pound of body weight. And when you're a teenager, you need even more protein and more fat because you're growing. And when you take teenagers and give them cricket protein and soy flour, well, no wonder their brains don't work. Their bodies are trying to grow and there's no energy left for their brains. So if you want a focused, happy kid, you give them at least hamburgers. They need the protein. It's precious. And when some government agency or food company tries to sell you to replace it with some industrial plant product, plants at best are 30% as good. So if you need 100 grams of animal protein, you need 300 grams of plant protein, and try and eat enough beans to do that. You can't. So I consider it starvation when we tell our kids you're going to have meatless whatever day. That's the day the kids get in fights and can't learn. Like, we need to do better.
Yeah, love it.
Now, in terms of plants, which was your question,
yeah,
arugula, lettuce, if you want some greens, those are good greens. Yeah. Spinach and kale, very high in oxalic acid, especially spinach, not good for you. In terms of fruit, raspberries, they unfortunately are almost as high as spinach. I know so many women who are like, wow, it's weird. My interstitial cystitis went away when I stopped eating raspberries and beets and almonds. I'm like, well, there you go. You had razor sharp calcium crystals in your urethra from the food you were eating that was all plants, because animals don't do that. Most people handle broccoli and cauliflower pretty well. So those are kind of neutral, I would say. It's not like you should eat those first. You just eat them along with your steak if you want to. For carbohydrates, white rice is best. But if you handle it, white potatoes could work. White potatoes have lectins. They're from the nightshade family. They are a cause of rheumatoid arthritis for a meaningful amount of people, wow, but not for all people. So yeah, you got to sort of go without and then do and then go with. Other than that, you can have fennel and celery, not in excessive amounts. Some carrots, not too many. Too many vegetables is not what we're meant to eat, and it will clog your kidneys, and it will cause your joints to calcify. It'll cause your brain to calcify. Something like 70% of people who died over age 80 had tissue calcification in their pineal gland and their thyroid caused by vegetable consumption. Not caused by meat. Kidney stones are caused by plants, not by meat. 70% of the
time. That's fascinating. And you say like the calcification of the pineal gland. And I think like instantly, like so many vegetarians are also spiritual people. Like, isn't that like getting in the way of their connection? Like, I don't know.
I always kind of feel, so I'm a spiritual person too, but a lot of my spiritual friends, I feel like they're bad at math. Like, oh, I'm worried about killing animals, so I'm going to be a vegan. I'm like, do you know how many animals were chopped up for your soy nuggets? The tractors, the combines go through the fields. Every moth, every butterfly, every frog, every lizard, every turtle, every bunny, baby deer, just chopped up. And you're probably eating them anyway. And the deaths per calorie for your processed food is higher than the deaths per calorie if you eat one cow a year. And they usually just freak out and stop being friends when I say that, but it's math. Like, this is how it works. I'm a small farmer. I have a regenerative farm. So the intent to be spiritual or to reduce suffering, it doesn't matter. It's just like biohacking. I don't care if you wanted to get results. I was a vegan because I wanted to get results. I didn't get results, so I stopped it. Yeah. And if you want to be spiritual, you want to minimize suffering, minimize death, you better ask yourself questions. Am I actually doing that? And if you're not, you change your behavior. And the worst thing you could do as a spiritual person is choose to be mentally weak because you're malnourishing yourself because you believe something that doesn't work. And if you want evidence that a plant-based diet doesn't work, go to India. Like, but Dave, they're a plant. No, they're not plant-based. They're vegetarian. They eat eggs. They eat cheese. They eat dairy. They eat yogurt all the time. And they eat ghee. So I especially with kids, man, it's just not okay. Our kids need saturated fat to form testosterone. And right now, teenage boys have half the testosterone that they did 25, 30 years ago. And you cannot be happy as a man or a woman without adequate testosterone. So all of this goes down to, what's our environment doing to us? We need sunshine in the morning. So we wake up, We need darkness at night so we go to sleep. But if you do that and you eat a bad diet that you think is good, how's your hormone levels? Are you obese? Is your blood sugar high? If so, your diet sucks or your lifestyle sucks. And there's no lying to yourself about that.
Yeah.
And you could say, oh, it's because I'm not trying hard enough. You're not supposed to have to try. It's supposed to just work. Yeah. And something is deeply broken in the world if you have to try this hard. And I say this as a guy who's profoundly sick and fat and tired. Right? It's not hard to do what I do right now. You just have to know what works and don't do the stuff that doesn't work.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I feel like you're giving so many people out there listening the courage just to, you know, actually stop doing the shit that's not working. Because I think that so many times, I know, like I hear it in my rooms all the time, is that people, we think we're broken, you know, not the model or not the product. We think we're the problem instead of going exactly what you're talking about. Like, no, hang on a second, this doesn't work for me. And choosing something else. So if my kids need, you know, steak in the morning as a nearly 50-year-old, what, like, I know protein is super important for me. But I suppose I also get to this age and I'm a woman and fuck knows I've tried to change it, but I do still have that, you know, conditioning of like, I don't want to put on weight. You know, what do I need to change about my diet?
Oh yeah. Here's the thing. If you don't want to put on weight, eat 1 gram of protein per pound. It's 2.2 grams per kilo of animal protein. You don't want to get fat? Do that first and then eat all the other weird plant stuff that you think you want to eat.
I love it.
Right? Have some carbs after you do that. I am telling you, I've worked with so many women, including a lot of women over 50. And when they get adequate animal protein and they get rid of the canola oil and swap it out for natural fats that come from animals and some olive oil and avocados or whatever, magically, they aren't fat. And if they still are not losing weight, then they get a lab test and their thyroid is broken and they fix their thyroid. And like, these are the basic things I've been teaching for more than 10 years in the world of longevity. And if you're eating the right stuff and it doesn't work, it's almost always thyroid and sex hormones.
Yeah.
And if those aren't working, then we look at toxic mold and heavy metals as primary causes. And there's a few other corner cases that can be a problem.
Where do we get heavy metals from? Where are we picking them up from?
Well, you know that lead's bad for you, right?
Yeah.
So it turns out any amount of lead increases cardiovascular disease risk pretty much linearly. So we just put it in gas. And so they kept lowering the amount allowed in the environment, at least in the US. So then now they make unleaded gas. What do you think they put in unleaded gas instead of lead?
I don't know, but I'm confident it's not good for us either.
A toxic heavy metal called thallium that is actually at least 100 times worse for you than lead. In Russia, they called it the poisoner's poison. So guess what plant accumulates thallium the most?
I don't know, spinach?
Kale.
Oh no.
The highest doses of thallium. So especially if your kale is anywhere near a road and there's unleaded gasoline, well, you might want to not eat that kale. So we're getting it because when you burn coal, which we do a lot of, coal releases a lot of mercury into the environment. So we get it from fish. We get it from dust from roads. We get it from industrial products. A lot of plastics have heavy metal contamination. And a lot of foods are made in places where, you know, the harvesting equipment or the food grinder has crappy components that were made 50 years ago out of toxic metals. And it's in the food.
Yeah.
Things like brown rice have 80 times more arsenic than white rice. In recent
again,
study,
another thing that thank you, my that's from my youngest son. Thank you, because he was pumped the day we were all back on white rice.
Oh man, the number of times it just kind of makes me laugh. I've done a lot of work with people from India in my career in Silicon Valley, and I've interviewed some of the gurus from India, and I'm just like, the Indian grandmothers know what's going on. If someone's sick over there, they get white rice and some ghee, which is clarified butter. And in the US, have some crackers that ruin your gut and some margarine, and it's just like a very different way of thinking. So in rice eating countries, poor people, the poorest of the poor, the peasants are the ones who eat brown rice, not because they want to, not because they're smarter. It's because that's all the rich people will give them. And they cannot afford the extra money for white rice. because you can get calories from the brown part of the rice. They just come with a lot of toxins. So if you can afford it, you throw away the toxic part of the food and you eat the part that's lower in toxins. And if you can't afford it, you eat all of it because it's better to starve and eat better to not starve and eat toxins. Yeah. So this is what brown rice is. It's an assault on your gut. It makes you gassy and bloaty. It's not better for you. Yeah. There's some kind of nonsense about there being B vitamins or complete protein. No, there's nothing worthwhile from a protein perspective or from a nutrient perspective in rice. It's just starch for carbohydrate. You want nutrients, eat an animal.
So tell me, we actually, I went into my local greengrocer here. We've got this great place called Santos, got to give them a plug, where they have these really strict rules with the products that they'll stock. And I went to the counter the other day and there's this petition that we've got going here in Byron at the moment to stop the council using glyphosate. And you know, one of the things for me is like, okay, we're all being exposed to this stuff. So how do we best, and I've got the one other question I want to ask, super conscious. I'm going to, how do we detox, number one? And then number two, what are the most important habits that as parents we should be teaching our kids when it comes to longevity?
How do you detox from glyphosate? There's some studies showing that trace minerals may help. Increasing glycine and increasing collagen intake are good ideas, assuming it's organic or grass-fed collagen, because industrial collagen will have more. Glyphosate, the gly is named because of glycine, the amino acid. When animals or humans are exposed to glyphosate, we replace glycine in our cells with glyphosate. And then we have dysfunctional collagen, dysfunctional connective tissue, and a lot of other pro-cancer things, according to lawsuits that have been won. So glyphosate's bad news. What are you going to do? Higher levels of trace minerals, more glycine, more collagen, and just avoiding it as much as you can. And the second part of your question was, what do you tell kids about longevity? You don't. When you're a kid, a teenager, you know what you care about? Being popular and having sex. Mother Nature does a very good job. And anyone who's ever been a teenager is going, oh my God, he just said the truth. You're not supposed to say the truth. The kids might hear. Dude, the kids are doing what you did. That's just how it is. Yeah. Right. And if they're not, they will whenever they get around to it. Like, that's, kids are kids, right?
Yeah.
So you don't talk about longevity. They're not old. They're never going to get old. And neither were you when you were 16 or when you were 18 or 20. But what did you care about? You care about power. You care about looking good, you care about feeling good, and you care about being attractive. So that's what you tell them. So what I've told my kids is, look, since you were young, I've taught you the effects of food on how you feel. You get to choose how you feel. I cannot police your food when you're a teenager. I don't want to. I have stuff to do in my own life as well. So, you know, you get to choose how you feel and you get to choose how you look. And if you have pimples and you're fat and your joints hurt all the time, you know what you did. And if you want to have good grades and you want to be focused and feel really good and just wake up and just have the sense of wonder, you know what you did. And I'm grateful that my kids both know what are kryptonite foods. And I'm sure they both eat some on occasion, but not very often.
Yeah.
And one of my proudest moments as a dad when, they were much younger, probably like, I'm going to guess 6 and 8, somewhere around that age. They were food shaming our nanny. Because she went to McDonald's and my daughter's like, ew, poopy chemical lattes. And I'm just laughing. And I said, guys, people go to McDonald's because it's cheap, because it tastes good, because it's convenient. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, people can do whatever they want, especially adults. I said, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to McDonald's and we're going to eat. And I'm thinking to myself, I know it. I'm going to feel like crap when I eat that, but I'll do it. And we're going to have, you know, hamburgers, and we're going to have ice cream and French fries and pie and go and get and all this stuff. And you see these two little kids and their faces are all angry and they're like crossing their arms. And I'm like, guys, it'll actually taste good. And they look at me and they said, Daddy, you can take us to McDonald's, but you can't make us eat. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, we know what our tummies feel like when we eat that kind of food. We've eaten it before. We don't want to do that. And I'm like, okay, if you insist. So then we had steak. So you have to, You put the kids in charge of their food. Look, you want to have a pimply face and smell in such a way that girls don't want to be near you. Dude, you earned it. Like, high five and go take a shower sometime, because I don't like the way you smell either. But they're going to do what they're going to do. You just tell them the tools. Kids are not dumb. They will choose what works as long as they get to choose. So yeah. Longevity, screw that noise. You're never going to die anyway. Technology can handle that for you. But do you want to look good for the girls? And then you've got their attention.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And it's so funny. I think I took my kids to, we call it Macca's here in Australia, and even KFC once. And like, part of me is like, oh, like, I don't want to do, and the other part of me is like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, I want to be here with this. And I want, and literally like my kids are like, this is great. And 20 minutes later, I shit you not, they're like, oh, like they felt so terrible. And it was like, yeah. And I love it. I think that's so important. I think in this day and age, you know, again, for me, one of my primary focuses with my kids is empowerment, you know, giving them the power to make their own decisions. So
you did something wise. When your kids are going to do something dumb, like, I encourage mine to double down. Go, you want a lot of sugar? Let's do it every meal today. Like, all right, let's have more. Right. And then at a certain point, like, oh, I do feel like crap. Like, there you go. And just also as a parent, just look at all the dumb stuff you did and you're still alive.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
so I'm just glad my kids aren't as crazy as I was that I know of.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise they're getting away with it. So clearly they've got the smarts. So it's all cool. Dave, I know you have to head out. Thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate you and all your wisdom. Thanks for being with me.
You are most welcome. Thanks for the interview. Guys, go to the Human Upgrade Podcast or DaveAsprey.com. 3,000 articles, 1,200 episodes, everything about biohacking you ever wanted to know.
Yeah, and it is just fantastic. I'm just going to dive into everything, and I've got my list. I'm going to head out to my supplement place this afternoon and get into a few things. So thanks again, Dave.
You got it.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. I trust you got what you needed from today's episode, and I look forward to having you on the next one. Bye for now. Thanks everyone for being here all the way to the end of the podcast. I hope you got lots of value out of it. I certainly had a lot of fun doing it. Could I please ask that you share this podcast with friends if you found it valuable? And also, bonus points, could you leave a review for me as well on Apple? It would be greatly appreciated. If at any point you would like to be on the podcast, or you've got questions that you'd like me to discuss on the podcast, by all means, get on my socials and DM me. Everything you need is there in the show notes. Have an awesome day. Bye for now.